Good afternoon, I'm Sabrina Mazanza, right for PMG. Extremely strict. Our teachers are in many
and the class is becoming bigger and bigger. And despite the fact that we've actually been warning for some time now that it's going to impact on our results, and technically when you look at the trip results for last year, they did increase. But when we've done a lot of analysis of the results, we've seen how we decreased versus how the problems increased. And to some extent, we were the victims of our own success. One of our main strategies is to keep learning the schools longer. And we are succeeding in that. We had the highest retention rate in the country by a long way. We retained learners from grade 10 to 12 at 62%. No other province was above 50%. So obviously, the more we keep in school, the more schools we need, the more teachers we need. And that simply isn't being taken into account. So the national government sees the sector as a sector that has looked at individual provinces, and they say if there are inefficiencies in some areas in some provinces, then you know, they won't give us insurance for the sector. Which I think is unfair. I think it's an ongoing struggle. We've been trying to wage with national treasury and by provincial treasury. And we also saw the new multiple examination opportunity, which many people are not happy with, but the effect of that is that in some provinces up to about with any vote and absentee trip, up to nearly a quarter of the entire matric cohort is not trying to find an exam last year, and suddenly the matric result went up by a large percent. So I think this just illustrates the issue of trying to look at the tables only and statistics without having the context behind it. So I'm hoping that this system will not continue for much longer. I'm pretty sure it won't, and I think that's a good thing. We are also trying to innovate at the same time, which is to keep up to speed with the basic demand. And we have this new transformative form strategy where we're trying to change the mindset of our teachers and learners so that they can, first of all, believe in themselves, because very often our learners don't believe in themselves. And we also continue with our e-learning to try and ensure that our learners are prepared for the 21st century as well. One really exciting event was our Selling Tests Awards the other day, where in grade 3 and 6 combined excellence in mathematics, the top 2 schools were township schools on merit. So I think we really are, despite losing that incredible strike, which I think is also partly contributing towards the demand for our schools in the Western Cape, so specifically given the basic sales strategy of the Eastern Cape, which is even the tournament teams themselves at the top of the end. So it's very worrying for me to see that they feel like that. And that is putting immense pressure on us. Apart from that, we still got a team audit report this year, fourth in a row. So congratulations to our team, and Pillar has been recruiting to the fire, and I'm acting as the chief director of people management, which is always an ongoing concern given that we have 40,000 jobs. So I think those are just my introductory comments, and the details of actually can go into with my officials.
If I can just make a comment to the MEC, looking at the year ahead and particularly the budget and budget allocation, following comments, our key objectives remain what they have been strategically for the last 5 years, for the last 5 years in this particular period. Our plans continue to affect our attempt to improve the performance of all learners foundationally in language and mathematics, and also results at the MEC level. But more importantly, besides access to product education for poor communities, we want to enhance the leapfrogging of poor learners so that we can eliminate inequality faster. It's a big challenge that is still remaining in our country. And therefore, the innovation and being in the forefront of global change, whilst we balance the increased demand, is a tough one, and that's what we're trying to do. Our attempts are continually confounded despite huge binding constraints of socioeconomic factors such as gangsterism, drug abuse, large increases in our numbers, average of 20 to 25 over the last number of years. As a response to these issues, we've done a few things with the budget, and if you like, it's a bit of a budget overview. First of all, we received a baseline growth of only 252 million. On our 23 million budget. And that 252 million baseline growth increase we've used in the following ways. First of all, to accommodate the increase in demand for learner growth. Our first priority was to invest in deteriorating learner-educator ratio. now of the worst in the country. And that's not because of bad management or planning, it's simply because there's not enough money in our budget to keep up with the pace of the expansion of the system in the province. We have allocated in three bold steps since last year, 554 additional educators. That accounts for 238 of the 252 million that's gone just in the additional teacher posts. We did that in three steps, the last in January 2012, and in February we added further 100 million to the basket of posts. Furthermore, besides that, our program support continues to expand, where WCB spends in excess of R1 billion. 270 million to fund the additional no fee schools in Kwakwaka 4 and 5. That's funding that's additional to the normal general standards, because we recognize that more and more poor learners are also going to schools that are classified problematically, in my view, in Kwakwaka 4 and 5. 56 million for the compensation for fee exemption that poor learners can't pay, and 60 million additional support for municipal accounts, which we know is skyrocketing and escalating in schools that are really, particularly schools in poor communities, are struggling to keep up with those accounts. Ministers made reference to the rollout of the transformative reform strategy, where 150 schools will be provided with in-depth training for the first time holistically in support of soft skills to enhance learners' attitude and approach, teachers' attitude to the program. I'll just make one comment a little bit later on. I want to just comment on the fact that there are, in our planning, three new collaboration schools in this financial year that we are going to under review, and I want to point out again that there's no additional funding that goes to collaborating schools. They are fully funding schools, but when you take a look at the classification of the funding, 46.8 million will move from what had been compensation to transfer banks because of the way in which the funding happens. But there's no additional government funding to the collaboration schools. Then also to note is a question that will probably come up about the quality assurance profile that they have on the school evaluation authority. Targeted evaluations will happen, and there is 12 million that has been reallocated from our quality assurance budget to kickstart the authority. Then it's also important, I think, to note that 240 million is set aside for the mainstreaming of e-learning strategy. That is less than what the budget in the previous year had originally been, 266 million. And the only reason why it is less is because of fiscal constraints and tough challenges. We want to upfront say again that the approach of the department is to be dual. We have to make sure that the basis quality pro poor education is well funded. At the same time, we have to be innovative if we want to make sure that our learners are competent in the 21st century world. Hence the dual focus on that amount. Also, another issue that is burning in more ways than one is our investment towards school safety, 56 million to the school safety program, and on top of that amount in the budget for school safety, there's also an additional 6 million for emergency maintenance in terms of safety specifically, and 4 million to secure vacant school properties that we have to protect for the needs of learners. And then, as I come to close of the opening overview, Chair, total investment plan for infrastructure is 1.75 billion rand in this financial year, this coming financial year. Major projects include 4 new and 9 replacement schools, 32 grade R classrooms, 67 additional classrooms at existing schools, and 99 scheduled maintenance projects. We've spoken in this house, I think, frequently about our inability within the financial constraints to adequately plan for or set money aside for maintenance. That's an issue that remains very problematic, and 99 scheduled maintenance projects is not insignificant. Now, I want to raise that aspect in relation to the fact that we apply our best to allocate a budget that balances those two needs, the needs for continual foundational group learning within the environments of a safety regime, if you like, that is not our primary mandate numbers of 25,000 last year. It's 50,000 in 2 years. We predict 136,000 in the next 4 years. Now, that 50,000 in the last two means we ought to have 50 new schools. We just haven't got many more. And so our average of about 4 new schools, the 9 replacements are, amongst others, for safety sake, and really atrocious regression of school buildings, but 8 schools isn't enough to meet the demand of learning pieces. And so within that space, I want to conclude first of all by saying that there are two systemic transformation processes that education is involved. The one significant one is the key learning strategy that the House is aware of, we've embarked upon over a number of years. The innovation and the resurgence of energy amongst teachers is amazing to us. With relatively little funding in the education budget year in and year out. Now, when we look at the increasing class sizes that are inevitable until the economic growth outlook of the country improves, the reality is that even is a way of ensuring quality learning and in closing the gap between the affluent, which have access automatically, and the poor, which don't. And that is part of our driving force. The second one is the one that ministers referred to, the transformative reform strategy. That is a very unique systemic transformation program that parallels the academic focus. This one is intended to invest in our teachers to ensure a positive mindset and attitude, create and recreate a love for children, but also give a mindset that is looking at doing things differently and doing things better in the next 5 years. At the same time, our learners are despondent, they see violence, they see trauma, and we have to get learners to also believe in their future. So the growth mindset program under the Transformative Reform Program is intended to do exactly that. There will be no additional funding to this program at this point in this budget. The funding for that aspect which needs funding will come out of the teacher development budget and is a minimal amount. So in conclusion, if I can say that the reality is that the weak economic and fiscal outlook continues to place pressure on the department. Everyone knows that, I almost don't need to repeat that. But we remain vigilant, we continue to place emphasis on fiscal consolidation, on cost-cutting measures at every possible school before, then it's a 1:35 or 1:36 ratio. Then our learners from the other communities are not accepted because then they indicate the school is full. And then you look at the poorer school is 1:50, 1:50, and they still accepting them in that. So I want to ask why it comes from that department investigates 21 in 2016. And in 2018, that number jumped to 45. Those are in our poorer schools, and in communities ravaged by problems related to unemployment, inequality, crime, and so on. So when one really looks at that, the quality of education for poor learners in the province, in the number of schools, is actually going down. Because if we had only 21 schools that were lower than 60%, we've now jumped. It's like over 100%. And I'm wondering what's happening in regard to these schools. And is it an event by the department, or we have to simply explain it in regard to the issue of numbers? But I think the department is actually failing in regard to the poorest of our schools. I think that is a trend which seems to be coming on. I'm trying to understand, does it have something to do with leadership and management? Does it have something to do with increased numbers? But that is a very concerning development that we're picking up. I would then just like to ask, and maybe this is something more just for our information check, that there's a reference on page 5 to the bill in the form of the evaluation authority, the issue of short-term intervention positions. Would it be possible to get an implementation plan for the implementation of the bill? What are the time frames involved? What are the costs involved? And when will we actually see, for instance, implementation of the intervention facilities? So is there a rollout plan and a costing to actually implement the goal which is now being signed into law by the Premier? And then just moving over, Chair, to the HOD, and also in the understand this introduction, and then also the comments that were made. I would just like to ask, in regard to the year that we are talking about, our budget for 2019-20, if we could just get the figure of the number of schools that would be ready to be handed over, because I think it's important for accountability, especially when we are engaging with communities, to be able to tell them that there are four schools, these are the four schools, or these are the eight primary schools. So could we have the number and the names of which new schools will be ready for occupation by the beginning of 2020, which is sort of part of this academic year? And then I would also like to ask, in regard to the, and there is more information about that later, but the HOD has referred to the performance strategy at the bottom of the page in regard to the theme for this year, which is I would just like to ask, in regard to the program of reaching the number of schools, what is the cost, which service providers are actually involved in implementing this, or we're going to be able to do this in-house, and then what is the informing theoretical framework for transform reform? Is it based on academic work that's been done that we rely on, or is this something that we actually develop in-house? So my question really is, what is the theoretical framework that underlines the transform to perform strategy? And then maybe see just on your challenge to Member Woodley, you said, like, what are the suggestions? Now, he also referred to the question of capacity, you know, the whole argument about when is the school full. Now, if, for instance, one looks at, he used the example in the years or in other examples, but if, for instance, you added five learners, if you add five learners to each, say, in a high school, you've got five grades, and you add five learners, that's an extra 25 learners. If you add 10 learners, which would probably be two per class, you know, you are essentially, you know, talking about 50 learners. Now, is the department seriously looking at because on the one hand, clearly you have people new schools, and we also agree that there was a strategy, and you can put schools in the Momentum area. Momentum High is an example of that. And we've spoken personally to the principal there. That principal is more than willing to have an extra classroom built for every grade at that school. Now, we're not hearing, you know, approach number one, about what is the program to increase the capacity at schools that have infrastructure, and also then dealing with this question about when is the school full. So I'm sure if one explained to and engaged the leadership of our school, these are all public schools, as much as most of them are fee paid, and you remain an argument for instance, increasing the number of learners per grade at a high school, two or one class. You know, that's another 50, that's another 100. Is that something you're thinking about? I don't necessarily think that schools engaged would be averse to that proposal.
Yeah.
And we've really made some good steps forward in that process. We will see the benefits in time, I agree with you. The steam in practice is rolling out as follows, and then I'll ask Mr. Abrams when I'm done and the HED is done to perhaps pick up with more detail as he's running with this program. The bill has been proclaimed. We're busy at the moment. The Premier proclaimed certain sections to be in effect on the 1st of March. The key is not one of them yet, but classroom observation is. So the statute is informed that the classroom observation is not allowed because the Premier hasn't proclaimed it. It has not been proclaimed. The key is still under, we're busy with the rest of regulations. Is there some consultation process that is happening and has been advertised for public comments on that? 18th of March. And after that, we will take into account those comments and finalize the regulations. Once that has been done, we will advertise for the chief evaluator to be appointed. I think Abrams can provide a detailed time frame with somebody else to ask for time frame with classroom and so on. He can do that for you. Not right now, but we can submit it. I think, yeah, once the chief evaluator is appointed, then he or she will appoint their staff. The intention is that this will be an independent office, so I will only appoint the chief evaluator. They will appoint their own staff. And then they will roll out the evaluation as they see fit. Collaboration schools, we certainly are seeing an impact in many ways. We've seen some of them haven't been as good as others, but we certainly have seen a very pleasing improvement in systemic results in most of the schools. We've also seen an improved parental involvement as well. There's a very different ethos in those schools. We also, because of the additional funding, have managed to get additional services in some of those schools, like community teachers, for example, at least one or two years I've seen, which is really helping to address the social issues that we simply cannot afford to do. The plan is to, the initial pilot is 5 years, and it's ending next year. So it's going to, there will have to be an ongoing discussion with the donors and the operating partners. We would like to expand quicker, but because it's such a different concept and a new concept, there isn't a wealth of operating partners out there. That's been one of our biggest constraints in growing it up through is that there aren't enough operating partners. And we aren't, obviously, don't want to hand over the school to somebody who aren't confident is going to be able to handle it. So we can't go quicker than that. We have to reassess, the program after the election, when in consultation with them. E-learning, added benefits. So there's been, as you know, the education takes a long time to see any substantive improvements in results. We have, at least you did some analysis the other day of small samples for the model schools only, I think, and only in mathematics, and it certainly does appear to be an indication that it is working. Certainly isn't conclusive. But it certainly does see, as you said, the excitement about it. Our teachers, even those who weren't so enthusiastic about it initially, are very excited. They're coming voluntarily to training sessions. We really developed a good system. There are some issues that need to be sort of sorted out. So our connectivity is a bit of a problem in some places, and we're addressing that. But I don't think it's a question of, I mean, there's a benefit as well just in and of itself is that we're preparing our learners for the 21st century, which we have to. Now also we wanted to bring coding into schools and I'm glad that DBE as well, not only coding stuff but we're selling it for computational skills because coding is simply one aspect of it and then very mechanical aspect, So we need to have the whole robotics as well so we can get the problem solving skills done involved as well. And DBE is busy working on a curriculum also for coding, which I'm very pleased about. Crime and social dynamics are absolutely there's no question about it. We've already had one of our schools where all the devices were stolen. They come back to us and they say, they can be replaced. And we say, no, we can't. We are not at the bottom of the equipment. When we made the inquiry, it appeared that it was inside wrong as well. So we will not be replacing computers if schools are not after them. They have to take responsibility themselves as well. It's not for us to do everything for them. Admittedly, there are some areas that are very difficult. But we are working with our principals to ensure that they control access better and so on. we do work with future we can. We don't get the support from staff that we need, not necessarily because of their fault. The ones that they are mentally still doing an excellent job in schools and are doing their very best, they are, as you know, simply under-resourced, particularly in West Cape, thanks to national government education. And it's difficult. I've started keeping a list. We know we have a watching group system with DOC, and we've started keeping a list of cases that we report of vandalism and theft in school. The follow-up is abysmal. It's absolutely abysmal. We've got one or two convictions in the last 4 years. It's shocking. So, you know, we can't, as education, keep taking responsibility where we have the government department. The criminal justice system is failing. It's really, we're in far bigger trouble than education. So we're certainly arguing what we can in the schools are also, but they are far less than no issue. On a little bit of fear. The sustained test results, yes, you're right, there was a lack of time, and it was also not very desirable in my opinion, but there are some reasons and issues you can get and we can go into them. There were some changes in some of the questions and it was a bit more difficult, but I wasn't taken into the technical issues. I didn't say that we have improved in language and mathematics in my report. I said it's our key focus area. It doesn't mean we actually achieved. So it's not contradicting what I said. But there were, and part of the check results I'm concerned, I did mention this in my report, but in case it wasn't clear enough, I'll do so again. If you get rid of your learners between grades 10 and 12, all the ones that are weak, so that they don't write in the checking plan, your percentage is going to go up. We don't need that in the Western Cape. Gauteng is 50% retention, we are 62% retention. So if you'd like me to take tips from Gauteng as to what to do in the Western Cape, would you like us, I'd like to come through in this meeting, would you like us to make sure we get rid of our weak learners and they don't write in the checking plan, and then we can also get 50% retention like Gauteng does? Or would you like us to continue trying to keep them in the school? Because that's what we are going to do. But I would like to know if the ANC would like us to not to do this, because that's how they are achieving it. The other way that others problems for achieving that is, as I said, the EDO. So not an exam opportunity. Other provinces didn't give their learners the choice as to whether they could write the exam in two sessions or not. We did. We had by far the lowest percentage of our matric cohort writing the multiple exam opportunity out of all the provinces. The second province, as far as I know, was Northern Cape. We're the only two provinces that reduced in our matric pass rate, because we had the lowest percentage of our cohort writing the MEO. In one other province, which I'm not going to name for now, there were, I think, a quarter. With MEOs and absentee matric, a quarter of the matric did not write the fourth exam. We aren't going to do that. And I'm quite happy to defend the slight drop in our prospects if we're going to keep more children in school and we're going to make sure that they have the opportunity to finish their matric exam at the end of the year. So that's what we're doing here. As far as their numbers are concerned, if I think about the numbers, yes, they are suffering from similar things to us, no question about it. But what we don't do, and what they do is they say, here's a learner, you go to the school and they feel safe. If they don't accept the placement, they simply take them off the list for unsafe learners and say they've been placed. They don't go to the school, doesn't matter. That's not what we do. So they have simply the same amount of problems we have, they just deal with them in a different way, and we try to make sure that our learners are actually safe and actually go to school. They've also increased their learner transport budget by double, from about 500 million to nearly a billion rand. We simply don't have that kind of money to transport them. Now, as far as what plans we have with the problem, we know that we get extra every year. If we do, we know we get extra every year. What we don't know though is always where they're going to come. And we've done everything we can to ensure that we have an early enrollment system, we publicise it. Many people are registering and for next year on the first day of the opening of applications for admission this year. In one school, parents were waiting in the table view area till 3 o'clock in the morning to register their children for next year. That's the kind of demand we're facing. So we've done what we can there. For example, in Berlin, we were erecting a school and saw the same site because we knew there were going to be extra people there. What happened in, the committee stops us from continuing the voting at this level. And now they're comparing the local decision to vote. So we do if we can, but sometimes committees intervene and stop us from doing what we are meant to be doing. Because they want us to have the school in a different place. Not because that land does not belong to us. We can't just simply build a school in where they want it to be. We've managed to negotiate with the city of Cape Town and to get us two pieces of land, one for the primary and one for high school. And they've been very helpful, but the point is it takes time for them to process the application to the sub-council, to do their public participation. So to this day, we still haven't got that piece of land available for us to use. Although we are ready, as soon as we do get it, and we're hoping to get it next week. So there are a number of issues as to why we can't keep people into schools. Sometimes people can do refuse. And we're going to have to stop being like that. And say you allocate to that school, and if they don't go, then they don't go. Because we simply cannot have every child in certain schools, and then every school can be overcrossed. As far as... I'd like to see what we can do to be more innovative when we don't have money and we have extra children. And it's just, you know, we're running out of options. We have already done the discussions with schools to add extra classrooms. I'm aware of the Muslim one, so I'll do that now. And I'd love to know, if we haven't done extra classrooms in a while, because we've been hearing that 2 years now, and I've mentioned that to my department, that the principal there is happy to take extra classrooms, so I'm not able to do more than this. And if they're a mayor, I suppose, you've got sometimes that you order your school capacity to see how many people we have in your schools and how many learners can be accommodated in each class, and I'd like to update the committee as to how far we are for that. But the point is this, many schools have a lower ratio because they pay fees, but they pay fees for the purpose of bringing down the ratio. So if we're going to add more and more people to that who don't pay fees, obviously the ratio then is also going to go up, and there's a very real possibility that parents who are paying fees are then going to take the children out of the school and pay private school fees rather to get what they're wanting for in the first place. So it's a very delicate balancing act, and many schools have been very accommodating. We have spoken to many schools, and they've been extremely accommodating. We've built extra classrooms on good schools to provide for more numbers. And most of them are, and they're aware of our difficulties, and they are generally willing to help. So the general question, I'm not aware of that particular situation, and I'd like us to look further into that. But we do need to make sure that those schools that are getting resources, particularly if they're so fine, to assist those that aren't. I don't want to destroy the resources, but we do have to ensure that people have the best possible opportunity. Teacher-learner ratio is unacceptable, but I really would like, I'm not joking when I say there's any ideas, because we've done the money that's given, what are the ideas we can do? When we don't have the money and we need extra staff, how do we get extra staff? Or how do we get around the fact that we need extra staff? And the two things we are using, now that you're going to ask questions and not easy, but we are continuing in learning, it's not ideal. We still need extra teachers. We can't expect one teacher, you know, one of the teachers to take morning school and afternoon school. So we need extra teachers for that, which we consider in there. But it is something we're looking at as a listed last measure. The other thing that's concerning with the thing is that it also affects negatively the optical and extramural program, because then we're going to have, you know, double school grade. And the SG can also maybe comment on that issue. But we certainly are looking at that. What else? The other thing also around the if we put children just anywhere, you know, then if they can't afford to either, that's not the only issue either. Sometimes they also can't afford transport to get to school. So there are a number of issues that are problematic. So it's a complex scenario. What else? And then the Dartmoor. I think I've answered the issue with systemics, and the issue will deal with that further, the contributing factors. Pass rates, I've just dealt with. I agree with you that math and science numbers are dropping. Partly the reason why the numbers are dropping is because the cohort is smaller last year than the year before. That's one of the reasons. But the percentage of the cohort is also down in that, and I have raised that with the department too. I agree with you, and it is something that's not really what we want to encourage more learners to We find quite a number of them is also coming as they came now from the Institute of the Eastern Cape, because they pretty much given up on their education there, and they come here with a lot of backlog. And we've just done an analysis of the results of those learners, and about a third of them fail, and the ones that pass at a much lower rate than are which have been here for longer. So that is one of the issues that is affecting some of this. Implementation plans of law, Mr. Abrams can check further and provide that. This is what ACD is not wanted before. When it was called before, that is also an issue, yes, I agree with you too, and we already have done in a number of cases the ACD is in fact instructed for to take additional learners because he has said that the school is not full in his opinion and he has done that, much to the unhappiness of some schools. Then, Honourable McKenzie, I'm not quite sure how South Africa is opening one school per week. I'm not sure when that school will go for, in fact, it is an election season, obviously. So, we have built one school every month for since we've been in office 2009, and it's kept 5,000 students, which I think is quite phenomenal. They do have a lot more money. I mean, they have a bigger population also, which helps. But I'm not sure, I can't give you still there, but there is more information on that. 252 million baseline, how do we move forward? I mean, that's what we were asking ourselves. How do we move forward? How do we move forward when we spend 258 million on that on teachers? Because we are committed to giving our attention to the possible. But of course, the more people we have in our classrooms, we cut down on other areas. And the program is to give us an idea of what her target situation is like, because HR in particular, I still call them HR, they're TMT now. It's difficult when we people mention that. And it's not easy because we've cut down a lot of stuff in the departments in the head office to try and accommodate more teaching folks, and we also need those support services in the office. So it's not an easy situation to be in. We have lost hundreds of billions of rand to state capture. I think we would be in a far better position than we are right now. E-learning issues and answers. Member Boyce already answered your issue on tuning. And then how the budget can strengthen support to teachers. The budget is not going to do this. We're going to do it as far as we can. But one thing we have got in this budget is a bit of extra emergency force for safety measures which we propose to the NTEC, including things like making sure that alarms at schools that are currently supposed to be monitored by private companies which often don't do that will be monitored now by the city of Cape Town. We're connecting them up to the American we're going to do a project with them to link up the school alarm to the TMC and then they can assist us with their activities to respond to those. We've also been able to pilot some schools with biometric access control. So we are doing what we can from a safety point of view, which obviously does affect many of our teachers understandably as well as our learners. We also, last year, I think we mentioned last year, we had to spend 200 million on draft relief measures, which was a big blow to us because much of that money was meant to go to fencing for schools that didn't really need it. So I'm hoping we'll have some more fencing coming up this year in the school that really needed it as well. Also, the transport reform and our teacher training measures will also assist in some of those aspects. And I think that's pretty much me. Thank you.
integration system for the next couple of weeks or so, or next couple of years, I'm sure we're going to come. So the reality is that we also have to have learners that are going to learn more than just receptively listening to a lecture in class. And access to digital resources which can be repeated will have improved learning outcomes over time, as well as learners being able to access it when they want to. And so there are many benefits that are already being seen and that will continue to go forward. The issue of Minister's comment on SAP, I'm not going to speak further about it, but just to say that there has to be a balance between securing schools to the extent where there is 100% safety for digital resources that get put in. But the balance is found because eventually the cost of that is higher than the cost of replacement of the very few cases where there are thefts. And at the moment, and we've done the research on that also as a department, the actual loss of equipment is minimal given the entire rollout. I say that with hesitation because it's an issue that one doesn't want to expand. But the reality of it is there has to be the balance between the loss and the cost of securing. I've cited the example of the securing a classroom, for example, versus a data projector. If you have a digital classroom with a teacher laptop, a data projector, and a whiteboard that's got an interactive clip-on device, that device can be removed and stored, the teacher laptop can be removed and stored, the data projector we put in the cage. Now, if someone breaks in and steals that, it's 12,000 rand, but it costs 25,000 to secure the classroom. It doesn't make sense in the context. The problem that we have is the vandalization that goes with it, that has a far greater impact. And that's not so much the tech issue that is there, it's the whole societal issue and the messages that we have is consistent. Related to both the McWorthy and of course issues about the performance of 369 and the trip results, I think it's important that we don't fall into the trap of comparing year on year only. What I've always argued is that you have cohort variances, you have cohort differences. What you ought to look at is trend analysis. And so one of the reasons, and I understand that it might be politically imperative to cite certain years of improvement across time. What's important for me is not that it's related to political terms, but the actual performance over 10 years or 5 years or whatever it has been. And if you take a look at that trend, it's definitely an improvement trend. So the years where they've been dips you get everywhere. In the NSC result, for example, part of the challenge with the mathematics performance in the level is that there's been a concerted effort to improve the quality, the difficulty level of the maths paper at the time. Now when that happens, learners perform poorer, and so the ability to get learners technique from the bottom decreases. So for a period of time, it has an impact on learners that are borderline faces selecting the subject. At the same time, initially, maths lit was an easy subject, and therefore learners would then deviate quickly to mathematical literature because they had to take one of those two. Now that's still a debate in my mind in the South African curriculum whether A, mathematics ought to be compulsory for all learners. The fact of the matter is there at the moment. We're not satisfied with the numbers of learners taking mathematics. We reckon we must edge towards 40% of learners. Again, that's a thumbs up, it's a perception that we have. But where we are at the moment, in excess of 35%, more than a third of learners, taking mathematics, it's better than nothing, and the performance of the learners are high increases. Ministers indicated, Mr. Ayers must comment a little bit on some of the dips that we saw in the scheme. And I'm going to ask you to do so now, and then Chair, I'll take up my feedback later on. But just on the matter of the amendments and the papers.
Thanks,
Mr.
Chair. The research study that Mr. has been guessed, but I also speak from my perspective. I think I'd like to closely concur. I think the longitudinal view is probably more relevant in the context of student testing than the year-on-year. We have seen at grade 3 and grade 6 level declines in math and language. I'd like to comment on those in the grade 3 paper for mathematics. They have been between 2018 as we continue to calibrate against international benchmarks, raising of the standard of the paper. Practically what that meant In the language rate for grade 3, we added an additional comprehension, an additional text, effectively asking more of the grade 3 learner in the 1 hour time frame. Again, we're seeing certain concepts stay stable in terms of testing those cognitive skills, writing, for example, or the skills we want to test. So whilst the pass rate could have declined, the averages, i.e. the mark that the learner gets, has stabilized to improve, and that is, from a research perspective, an opportunity to gain to learn, in a sense. I do point out to the chair, I think for grade 6, we have been satisfied that we've been able to consolidate some of, if we look at the longitudinal, for some of the jumps we've seen in previous years, particularly 2015 for mathematics, we've seen those concepts sustained. There are challenges in the language, but again, we've added an additional text and made it longer. The text, the comprehension text in itself was longer, requiring the application of all the one. And so the decline again from a year-on-year perspective in mathematics, not necessarily concerning in language, we are very clear where those challenges are. And given the language of instruction, we are very clear that it's in the Afrikaans here, and I think we will develop interventions in that regard. I point out to the committee that at the grade 3 level, to substantiate why this is not necessarily from a research perspective, but is a challenge that we believe is not being fit, we see a stable and improving level of performance in Metropole East, which arguably carries the bulk of that growth that comes through the problems year on year. And given that some of that context is that the learners in that context may not have had adequate or effective early childhood development, we do see that consolidation at the foundation phase to be quite a positive development. They presented in Metropole East continuing to show stable and improving results despite the challenges.
Thank you. It's a very complex process. And also, for example, with an emphasis on progression of learners, one of the things that eventually impacts on grade 3 is if there's progression of learners from grade 1, that their progression, whilst they automatically will remain in grade 1 for better consolidation of the original foundation of learning, then that impacts when they get to grade 3. And this is exactly why we have systemic assessments, so that we can analyze with great depth all the potential impact that impact on that. I just want to make reference also to, I'm sure it was Member Uthi's, I think it was about the 35,000 learners and why I'm adding so largely. You didn't say it like that, I'm just getting at what are our plans in there. Now, the big problem that we have with that is that if we knew, because they enrolled in March for the following year, where they were going to be, we still wouldn't be able to put our classrooms as quickly because we haven't got money for it. But at least our planning would be easier than when they arrive in January and in one place. That's the biggest challenge we have. Admittedly, the problems of Gauteng has it as well, and this will make reference to the approach that Gauteng follows in that regard. But it also speaks to, and I don't want to speak about how they can manage the school a year and what the planning is for when they deliver all of this for a week, school a week. I was going to say school a day. But they get significantly more CD money. And those, lots of those schools that are delivered are CD money schools, and we don't get that. We get CD money, but not as much. And so the ability to put that in place with that kind of funding augments their ability to deliver messages. How do we deal with the question of 25,000 a year extra kids that we haven't got a place for and aren't able to plan for, and more importantly, haven't got money for? Well, the answer is there is absolutely nothing that we can do other than to recognize that we have to give places. Member Dougal mentioned an example of putting, say, two learners a grade extra. That would be great if the two learners are spread over the world. But the majority of these grade 8, for example, coming to high school, coming to the Concord High School, grade 10, grade 1, the key points. And then they aren't necessarily where the spaces are. So even if you didn't want the classrooms, and I'll ask Mr. Mayor now to respond to the minister's request, but even if we do that, the spaces are often the places where the demand is. The example, for example, of Mullerton High School that was mentioned is valid, but there is always more depth. We have in fact engaged with the school. And whilst there is a preparedness to take, it comes with conditions. Parents to take is provided we repair the school, we put up a new school wall on, is the roof on the wall, etc. Despite to not be able to build extra schools. So we have every circuit manager looking at every school that is closest or next closest or next closest. And as the minister said, there are instances where our recruiters are going to say, you are obliged to have the following. I do, as a last resort, because of the impact and the issues related to that. Other than that, the reality of the matter is we are going to have more learners. The class sizes aren't growing unless we get money to build schools and money for more teachers, more services, etc. Therefore, we have to improve our teaching techniques. And yes, the answer is that I was going to say, I'm not going to make the comment that my minister makes on electricity. We deal with electricity when it comes or when it's on or when it's off. We have to teach. The point is that we have to help our teachers, and they are capable. Our teachers are willing. They understand the challenges, and they understand the fact that we've not had great uproar with the overcrowding. That very often there's been issues is because of our conversations with school communities, the fact that we talk to our teaching communities, and the fact that we are on an ongoing basis spending hundreds of thousands of rands every year in teacher development and teacher training, indicating, for example, the potential for using e-learning resources to teach larger classes, the potential for having group learning. And so there are a number of ones. E-learning is one. The telematics program is one that is helping to deal with the larger classes, having telematics, having support. The digital resources is another. The improvement of efficiencies in teaching time. Focusing on teaching time that almost counterbalances the reality of wasted time. It doesn't work everywhere, and there's a lot that has to do. The minister spoke about the issue of platooning. And the challenge of platooning, and we look at it when we look at it every year, we've been forced to introduce time for any. Hopefully it's a short term, but I almost want to say that I'm prepared to stake my reputation on it, that once you start platooning, you don't get rid of the school again. It is just going to be the one. And remember, whilst you platoon the school, you might help with a building, that are, first of all, you still need money for double teaching or for double resources, etc. So except for the plant saving cost, there's not savings cost throughout my platooning. But more importantly, the huge debate why we not just grab platooning as a first solution, when actually we ought to be getting more money to build schools, is because once you do that, the regression in education as a result of the fact that you are forced to have less hours for a school. It's okay for a primary school, for a foundation phase particularly, because the number of hours that you have those learners are shorter. But the rest of your primary school, you can't. 52 of those means you have to have school from something like 7 o'clock in the morning to something like 7 o'clock at night. The increased issues in our current society with danger and other issues and transport, people that travel, we loathe to countenance that as a primary solution to the challenge. Not, we don't, but I think it's interesting. I'm going to ask the mayor to comment on the progress with both the audited available classrooms and also the school food. And then I'll be happy to finish that.
Thank you, Chair. Just to assure you that Floriate Floriate Primary has been very well managed at the moment. And any one of our star schools in the North Bay, you will be welcome. Chair, just in terms of the space, the regulations are very clear in terms of the amount of space allocated to a particular learner in a class. But we sit with a number of facilities that are very old, and so the sizes of the classrooms actually also restrict the number of learners that we could actually place in the class in terms of the ratios that are given to us. So a learner, for example, in grade 4 would have a ratio of about one square meter as a requirement, and for a learner in grade 1, for example, where they have more space requirements, about 1.5 square meters, for a learner in the lower grade. So with our small classrooms, applying that particular formula would indicate a very low number actually to fit in the classes. We have also, for example, gone on extensive programs to have reading corners in classrooms. And that in itself takes up space within a classroom as well, and then reduces the number of learners when it's actually able to fit physically into the classroom. I think what we must also acknowledge, Chair, is the issue of the school governing body's admission policy. The
is responsible for determining the admission policy of the school. And in many of the schools, the admission policy actually states, goes to the level of detail that says, we will have 28 or 35 or 40 learners in a classroom. And that is a challenge for us, you know, especially in governing bodies that have dug in the yield in that particular regard. It's extremely difficult then to argue, you know, because parents have paid in terms of their school fees to allow additional learners in the classroom. It's a double-edged sword for us to apply the ratio and say we're going to go with a one square meter per classroom size for learners in a particular school. And so we may go into a school in the leafier suburbs where we apply the ratio and it comes out because of the building that's smaller, it may say there are 26 learners only able to fit in the classroom. On another school we may apply the same formula and because the classrooms are newer and they're slightly bigger, we may be able to take 30 learners into the classroom. And so in some cases we may be, you know, strengthening our argument for a school to take more, but then another school that has bigger classes may then argue to actually have smaller classes on the basis of the formula that we apply. So there are challenges in both regards. The head of education is correct. We have spaces in areas where we don't have a demand. So for example, in the Range High School and the Range Primary School in the Alton River area, we have space for large numbers of learners. We even looked at the possibility of transporting learners from the Delft area to Montreal, Protea Primary, for example, where we have large numbers of empty classrooms. But the parents have indicated we're not prepared to send our grade 1, 2, and 3 learner on a bus from Delft to Montreal, for example. And it's largely around the issue of the safety of the learner on the bus route as well as at the facility in Montreal or in Alton River. Those are the kind of broad challenges that we have to choose. Thank you.
Thank you.
So,
thank
I'll
you.
Wrap up quickly. Just to say we also cognizant of the fact that there are schools that say the school is full and then it's genuinely full, but other schools do not say that, just take in whatever comes. And that becomes a problem because once you have that, then you say now we're in a marketplace, so we want the tent, and then put up the tent, and then the demand classrooms, and then that changes the planned order of classroom and school building. So that's very complex, and I know you understand that. So, but we are committed to continue with the order of empty classrooms and also to continue with, for every school, developing a process whereby we understand how many can take, how many that school can take. Now, us also have to build more classrooms, etc. And we must also remember that where government bodies can apply first, the ratios are sometimes per teacher are lower because they pay and buy additional teachers. That the picture is that challenge. Just in the context of the pass rate versus 60% schools, again, you'll be aware also over the years that school yo-yo. Sometimes when schools perform poorly, the pressure that is put on the seeker, the quality of teaching improvement, etc., so more learners don't make the grade, and then there's a smaller group, perform better, go up, and then they go down again. And so again, it's a trend that we need to look at. Obviously, if the performance comes down, then the schools also perform more poorly. It's a link ratio. How do we deal with the matter? Every single school has got a specific improvement plan. Every single school with their circuit managers analyze precisely the reason why learners have failed. And if it's a failure rate more than 60%, it means under 60%, it means we identify per learner what has caused the failure. We subject choices, how many subjects it is. We take a look at the teaching of those subjects. So there's a detailed analysis and improvement plan that accompanies that process. Not because of the education department simply being useless and failing. The analysis is good, the developmental plans are good, we still have to administer them. And the trauma that learners face often in our communities at the moment contributes, I think, sometimes to the problems. Then just a question that was asked by Member Dagmore on the figures of the schools, it was a fire that the schools and the length of the schools will be opening by 2020. We'll just note that. Then the question about the transform to perform. and particularly the theoretical framework. Now, the transformative course actually got four programs to it. The first one is new to the development of all levels. Now, there's not a theoretical framework for that. The important point is that one needs to develop leaders, and the reality is the education department has not invested in leadership development at all levels. Executive level, middle management, school leadership. The biggest leadership echelon in the department that leads education is our SMP at school. And the department school, 5,000 to 6,500 leaders. And so we're investing over the next 5 years. Investing doesn't mean new money or budget, it means utilizing and prioritizing budgets for leadership development at all levels. So that's one of the programs. The other program is a VANTAGE program, costing us nothing. It's one of the four programs that transform. The VANTAGE program, all over the world, research is evident, and in our country, in our organization, values has been neglected, societal values are part of the part. So I've never had any individuals, I mean, if I recall correctly, and I'm sure members that are familiar with education will know the VANTAGE program that Mr. Father Aswan had introduced many years ago, is exactly the same underpinning. The reality that we didn't take off the ground across the nation adequately. Our VANTAGE program, restructuring, we're refining it, we're driving it, and already we see it quite dramatically taking off in our schools. The other two is the Growth Mindset program. Now, the Growth Mindset program, there's a lot of research underpinning that. There's a 20-year study done by Dr. Dweck, that's a well-known researcher in the issue on the aspect of growth mindset. That's the program for learners that we're all learners to. And we've run a pilot on that already in 20 schools. That pilot is shown in high schools with a 3 45-minute exposure to some videos and talk sheet, a 4.6% improvement in mathematics in grade 9 in those 20 schools on average in the high schools where that was run. And change mindset of teachers, it's an attitudinal and approach program. Based on neuroscience, there are a whole list of those. I forget the researcher's name that presented the paper at the International Conference of Principals at the CPICC 2 years ago. So the underpinning of that theoretical framework is clear, and also it has a multiple strand program. The question was the cost and the service providers. The only one of all of those will be done in-house. The growth mindset for learners is And I recall, in fact, doing a presentation to the Standing Committee on it, and I'm not sure if all the members were there, in the course of last year. The Growth Mindset is an international program for which we have rights at no cost, including video rights, and all that we're doing is we are translating into COSA and Afrikaans for the appropriate learners. Values is of no cost at all, it's in-house training, and in-house the leadership is either in-house or pro bono at this point in time. We've not paid for any leadership development aspects. We'll look at it as far as we can. The only service provider that is in the process of being procured is a service provider to do the change mindset for teachers, because it's a specialist field. And 34,000 teachers is in the process of procurement. The thinking is that would be in the region of about 7 to 8 million a year, which will come from the teacher development budget. So it's not new money, new assigned money. How are we going to cope? Emma McKenzie, education is forced to cope. Our teachers will be forced to cope in the absence of sufficient funding to expand the group. So I'm just going to say that the commitment that I and the teachers of this province make is that we have no option. We serve the learners of this nation and the learners of this province who submit it. The 240 million for e-learning is in WCD budget, it's not CI budget or Dr. P's budget or any other continent, that's WCD budget. And that is for whatever it is inside the school. It's for the Wi-Fi inside the school from that budget. and also I think getting a good experience base, but also ensuring that you have young people in education support them getting great quality young teachers also in the system. We've not at this point in time generally had a shortage of teachers in Western Cape, despite the increased numbers. We've always found teachers, but sometimes in certain subjects, in certain areas, it's difficult to get teachers. Yes, not because of unfairness. And then, Chairman, Chairperson, to give teachers hope, there isn't budget here.
Thank you. I hope we get to members, we are
Thank you. I was about to ask answer on the issue as well as the issues that you answered down on the retirement committee. I do think that the debate that you start to have about not only education in this country. I know there are some countries where they are increasing the retirement age to about 70 now because people are living longer and there's an acknowledgement that they can contribute still. And, you know, and I do think we need starting a discussion with the board. Thank you.
Thank you. We are going to take
that
Tuesday now, and you're still doing so we will come back and see you on Thank you.
page 197. Leadership. I was referring to leadership at a district level with those.
172. And you know, when you look at the 21, sorry, the 23 billion, the 23 billion available, you see, when you look at that equitable share from Treasury, I'm saying you can't, you know, when you get a conditional grant, you know, it's conditional, but when you go further down and you look at financing, that's from our own provincial Treasury, and you see there's 160 million in total, and 70 million of that from Access Finance Reserve and Provincial Revenue Fund. And I think the real debate that we need to get into, and possibly this isn't going to be the occasion to do that, but if we're looking at the overall budget, and we look at the Asset Finance Reserve that we're raising in the province and the Provincial Revenue Fund, do we think education is getting an adequate share of that? And especially if we are facing, you know, the issue of the accommodation crisis, I think we've also got an interesting discussion about, you know, how e-learning can assist with the accommodation issue with the question of when is school full. And I mean, I know it's simplistic and the HOD does indicate the pressure, and I agree the pressure is on 8 and 10 and 1. But if you've got, say, roughly 400 schools and you could find space for 50 people, that's 20,000 learners. So, sure, it's a lot more complex than that, but I think that whole issue needs to look at it. I just want to flag, and possibly just in a way, a question stated to MEC. I mean, do you raise with your colleagues in the cabinet and the Treasury that, you know, because often I just get the impression that the MEC is inclined to blame, you know, national government, and, you know, she obviously has the right to do that. But surely she should be telling us as well, what is she doing to fight for more on access to financing reserves? What is she doing more to make a case around the provincial revenue fund? Because those are getting 160 at the moment from it, but if we have particular issues and challenges, you know, so I'd like to hear from the MEC whether she's happy with those allocations from our own provincial resources. I think the in terms of 172, and I'm not sure the member will be covered that, but just specifically, you know, could we break down for us in terms of total receipts? Are you able to anticipate in this financial year under discussion what exactly do you expect that department in the various schools will be offering in monetary terms? Could we have a sense of that? I would then also like to ask in regard to table 811 on page 179. If you look there at that particular table, you know, there's the issue of transfers to NPOs. Can you just give us a sense which NPOs are actually affected by this? And then, you know, the issue of public ordinary schools share, I think, is also an opportunity where I would like doing in the case on the show here, and that is a summary of the expenditure, the breakdown, we ask you, I presume that the policy chair, I'm going to stop there, but I'm trying to also assist you in most of our questions asked, the cost of the time.
On page 188 of the rule, the big rule, you can say that there's a 5-3 days after the couple of weeks, from 90 million to 125 million. I looked through the annual performance plan on page 19 and 5.3. And I start to see what sort of training are you going to spend. If you get an indication from the department, I don't need the exact details on the early from the candidates, but it's nice to know the training are you equipping how they pass teachers well. And if one looks at the main appropriation in 418 and adjusted to 19 or 28 million, yeah, that's spending in one. We don't need to, we will get the annual report ever to be over for the next term. But our confidence with adjustment that you can spend that money, because we've now, based on the report, we didn't spend that money, and adjustment that now we increase it again to 8%, and it will stay in place because we do spend this money for the economy. Just wanted to get a sense, and on the slide, on the ABC, some of the blocks are grayed out, so it's difficult to read the numbers. Look on page 80, table 5.3, the annual performance plan. If, for example, the numerators and the denominators for the 16, 2013, 2018, but for the year 24, that is a great task. Can you just share with us what was the reason for? What do you want to do about the percentage spend ratio? Can you just share with us those numbers? Anyway, just one question on that. On the page 188 in the big rule, and on the notes program 5, the third paragraph on the top, it says there's some problem in the government report, there is no method by which the recording of the actual expenditure related to a particular person can be distributed between human resources and the sub-program. Now, I don't understand that. And then on sub-program 5.3 on the note, it says the cost of the expanded topic work program for the training of ECD learners is included. But what is the cost? So if you just give an indication, what is the cost of the one note, what's included there? And then on the target, I'm sure this is the target or the institution, it says human resource development 1, and then 1. Is that 1 program? Is it 1 and 1,000? One man. Can you just give me indications? This is what I want to understand. That. What table 5.4? Hey, table 8.5, number 4. Human resource development. Man appropriation 1, is that the 1,000?
1,000.
1,000 man. Okay. And was it just one program? Is it one huge 8,000 development program? What do you all think?
Is that enough?
Yes.
Okay.
Very briefly from my part, I just want to answer about the ECD. I don't think that one of the little creatures gets very excited about the ECD because given what national government is talking about, it's got huge implications for our part. Beyond anything that we've seen right now, we think we've got problems now regarding accommodation of learners by trying to take on this whole thing because not properly, it's very carefully and properly planned and money given for it. I think in general we understand the principle of it, but at the moment we've supposed to achieve universal wage are about this year already and we have been able to improve the budget. So if we're talking about taking 1-4, which generally fall under social development, this is an issue that was asked to me about it. I raised it with my colleagues in training. I think my department can speak to the fact that I've been raising this continuously since I've been appointed about the allocation to our department. We are now at the point where we make slide presentations that intake for about 90 slides. We're going to intricate detail regarding what we need for what purposes of transport. As a result of those presentations that we've actually got to have something when they're for safety issues, because we've specified that in the intake presentation. And I certainly have, I've read it actually every forum, including the control, and I think my colleagues are quite good with me doing so. So I certainly have done everything I can do. Obviously, I'm very happy with the allocation to education because I know the needs we have, but at the same time, we need to acknowledge that all our services and problems are affected by increased numbers, not only education. And our clinic is also under pressure, our social development is also under pressure, we need more social workers. So we do all understand that it's a balancing act, but we have had some movement this year, I think, for the first time. I think, if I'm correct, Mr. Eli can correct me. I think there has been some movement from National Treasury to start acknowledging the differences in the numbers. I'm not sure what that translates to, so if you could maybe respond on that. But just to assure the honourable member that I have done absolutely everything within my power to raise issues of what we need and to find money in problem management.
I'm just going to make two more comments. The majority of the responses to the CFO will respond to, and possibly one or two other parties. Just in regard to the ECB, whenever there's a function shift, as is the case within the department between programs and even more so when it's from vote to vote, that function shift usually is followed by funding and people for that matter, if you ask the people. Not people individually, but posts. So posts and money must come first. So it's as if the current project will just be managed by another department. Now that's far more easy said than done, as you know, because there's a great expectation to come with us. So a lot of planning needs to get into that, and it's not going to be something that's going to happen this financial year. It's a very intricate process. So my prediction is that the will is there, but the want to work. Then the issue of the more representative senior management serving community is absolutely on that point. And all that I can say is that it is our commitment to try to achieve appropriate, qualified, particularly the African, because that's the shortage of the moment. You're quite right, but there have been more, there's some less now.
comes off to dealing with the additional growth and the additional funding coming from national as well. And just also on that note, we will request taking to the provincial grants. As you know, because of the financial difficulty and the lack of growth in the economy, national has decreased some of the provincial grants, except for perhaps the institution program. But they have cut down the EIG grant, they have cut down some of the other ones that have been referring to now in terms of the efforts. They have wanted to decrease that. But why we don't see in some of those provincial grants, particularly in our year, is because it's based on performance. And so they're not going to have effective assets for work, they're not going to have effective funding for our year to show improvement as we can actually go there. And then what happens if you don't perform, they write the SSP and say that we can stop this grant, get underperformed by a particular, if you say, James Smart, and that's 10 million if you have to spend, say, 16 or 17 million of your funds, then the right thing is to keep your portion of the grant as well. It also comes from the beginning of the facility, either the people or the National Army Group, they will write you and say that you need to either keep a plan of action or plan of action, and then you'll allocate. And that again,
so it's allocated on an annual basis.
If I go to the other questions, I go to 176, and the question about why there seems to be ups and downs in terms of infrastructure. We have in class, as you can see there, we have in class the maintenance. Because as you can see, the infrastructure has, because of the job, now we're putting money back into the maintenance and the revitalization and the surface of infrastructure to do with the backdrop around the maintenance. So we will see the surface there as well. And in terms of phase 178, it's a intervention program that we deal with there, which we get that phase out around 178. cost is related to the cost we incur for those advances at the end of the school. We should think on some of those funds to take justice, but we should think on the ground. The school is obviously a major system in the scope of this case as well. Any questions around phase 172 around the collaboration partners? Remember the way that the partnership works is there is the funding contributes some funding to the governing body itself. Because they sit on the governing body itself. So there's funding coming to the governing body. That funding is reflected on the financial decisions of the school itself. And that funding doesn't come to us as a partner. We make our normal financial contribution to those schools in terms of the standards. And then also the agreement also says that where they have their inputs and they want to us to fund that, then the agreement says that they can either ask us to pull the post or they can pull the post and then we transfer money to their salary to manage that particular aspect. Just like a normal governing body comes in, they would manage that as well. So technical wise concern is not a contribution to the problems. Those who are governing body, those who are students. So want to see the funding, at the school level. But again, there's agreement between the funder and the operating partner as well. We should not be the partner. But again, it's not kind of perspective. You won't see the funding from office unless they make a contribution directly. I think we have this year's referred to the method of the PE. Just to say that some of the challenges we had was integrating the information and also in the case of some community has also to data as well. And we do have these interviews with the PE, the latest one was used to retire last year. And we placed a sort of a member of SNS in the Texas to pay the back. That's the requirement in the UPSA regulations. Payments to municipalities to phase 211, that is based on payment, the pay point signature. So it's calculated, but it says where the payments are being made. It's not payment to the municipalities,
it's just the geographic.
Yeah, it's a reflection of where the funding is going. So what I probably meant at some stage is a consideration of how much funding flows in that particular area and how it affects that particular localized economy as well. Because when our schools, we make movement funds to our schools, they spend money on school services and other things which obviously, and even our schools, which affects the local economy there as well. So,
so the answer is yes.
The issue around 2% levy is not a great part, but if you think that the issue are confident all about that, and that increases due to the uptake we can have around practitioners. And I think one of the issues around the training, what you're saying is everybody comes from everywhere. It's difficult for us to say you in program 4, and you in program 2, and you in program whatever. That we've been trained for. Because when we get to the CTLI, we invite everybody. It's difficult to say the new program 1, the new program 2. So we call it that, and then
Just a follow-up question here. On the issue that I raised around receipts and funding, and particularly the provincial financing, I don't know if members have actually looked at that, but what notably disturbs me is that in terms of the active financing reserve of the provincial revenue fund, there's a 43, it's basically a 43% decrease from last year. Last year, the treasury, essentially the provincial treasury, page 172. I just want to demonstrate something there. So the provincial treasury, in terms of the revised estimate, let's use the main appropriation 2018-2019, say 209, and then it was adjusted, and it ended up at 282. This year, it dropped to 160 million, which is a 43% drop. And if you actually look at you know, where it's going to, say 2021, they say it's going to be 168. But now, just a quick comparison, if you look at health, and just if you put interest on page 228, health has dropped only by 9%. If you go to social development, it's dropped literally from 13 to 10. So my concern is that in terms of provincial support for education from those two sources, there's a huge gap that happens in education relative to health and social development, which also focus on social justice. So that's just maybe a contrary report comment, but it's just an observation I'm making and a concern. And then could I just ask to understand Ina's explanation of collaborative schools, but could we get in writing, maybe we should just ask that in terms of the donor funding to collaboration schools in the last year, could we just get a sense of what are the amounts, because obviously we've got certain collaboration schools, it shouldn't be too difficult to find out what those funders pay to the governing bodies, because it's obviously, as Ina has explained, not expected as a provincial receipt, but can you just get a sense of what that actually amounts to?
So maybe a quick comment on the money issue. Before that, I also wanted to say that this sector is meeting a charge, and I was talking to Nick, because Econ was breaking out before 100 GA government students actually has Econ on these students also. But on the issue of money, the revenue fund obviously depends on what there is in the fund. So some of this money, we like to answer an issue now. On the, I think the 70 was money that we got from national for the drought relief, if I recall. But I'm more than happy if you want to ask questions of the provincial treasury and of the budgetary policy committee to know why they allocate the money in the way they did. But I think I'll also have some issues with Tiger Bay Hospital that they have to repair quite extensively. So, I mean, we do have to take into account all the needs of the province as well, and health obviously as important.
Thank you.
we certainly have huge needs in the province across the board. Education is not the only department, and it really is becoming unbearable. And I just would like to appeal to all the departments to do what you can to assist us in ensuring that in the run-up to the election, communities don't destroy ties. Because the latest tactics are destroying schools, running into schools, vandalizing, attacking murders, doing an issue today, implementing this process. And everyone wants to protest about anything, wants to close schools, and it's not an issue for others. So I would just appeal across the board for all of us to really get on it.
Over Monday. Thank you. meeting, we have the adoption of this report of this meeting today on the 15th of March to adopt this report. Members, I thank you very much for your availability for today.
There's something that needs to be done.